Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder is plowing ahead with his bid for Salt Lake County Mayor. The candidate has picked up the support of several elected officials in the valley, including mayors and lawmakers, but the chairwoman of the county Republican Party has opposed his candidacy after he admitted to and apologized for writing newspaper articles about his city under the name Richard Burwash. We'll talk with Winder about what he has to offer voters and where his campaign goes from here. Then Howard Marlowe isn't ashamed to be called a lobbyist. The president of the American League of Lobbyists took issue with many of the things expressed by ex-convict Jack Abramoff in our previous interview on this program. He'll join us to defend his profession from the public sentiment against lobbyists. Politics Up Close is right after the news on NPR Utah, KCBW. Welcome to Politics Up Close this morning here on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thank you for still believing is what West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder told supporters as he launched his campaign for Salt Lake County Mayor in January. And so far, he's got several elected officials in the valley who do believe in him, like the mayors of Murray and Taylorsville and state lawmakers who are supporting his campaign as well. But will it be enough for him to achieve the GOP nomination, especially when Salt Lake County's Republican chair has urged him not to run? Mike Winder joins me now in the studio to talk about his candidacy for county mayor and what he has to offer voters. And Mike, it's good to have you back on the program.
Great to be here. There's no better way to start a Friday morning than hanging out at KCPW.
All right, very good. Well, listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments for West Valley Mayor Mike Winder. We're at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Mayor Winder, how long have you been pondering this run for county mayor?
You know, I'd say for the last year, 18 months, as we've been looking at the direction in Salt Lake County, there needs to be some new leadership and a fresh voice going forward.
And so is this a job that you were looking at perhaps even back when you ran to be mayor of your own city in 2009?
I wouldn't date it that far back, but I've enjoyed being mayor of West Valley City, and it's with mixed emotions that I look at moving on to Salt Lake County possibly. But there's a lot that needs to be done at Salt Lake County right now.
So what do you mean when you say new leadership?
Well, I think that Salt Lake County has grown too large. $640 million budget makes it the most expensive urban government in the state of Utah per capita. Utah County is getting it done, for example, at 57% of the budget, again on a per capita basis. So I'm a limited government conservative, and I think we've let the government in Salt Lake County grow too large.
What makes you want to be county mayor? What is it that attracts you to this leadership position specifically?
You know, I'm interested as a limited government conservative, like I mentioned, of reigning in the county budget. I'm interested, and perhaps I'm biased, as the mayor of the second largest city and past president of the Utah League of Cities and Towns, but I believe in cities, and I believe that we need to help more areas of the county become cities or become parts of cities. The government closest to the people is the government that governs best. And third, I believe in economic growth, and we have a great track record in the public and private sector of helping to facilitate job creation. I think that's just what we need right now as Salt Lake County is trying to emerge from the Great Recession.
We're speaking with West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder, candidate for Salt Lake County Mayor. Mayor Winder, what do you think of the current job done by incumbent Peter Caroon? You mentioned county government growing too large. Is that something that's happened over decades? Is it something that's happened on his watch? What are your thoughts exactly?
Well, frankly, it's happened over decades. I like Peter Caroon as an individual. I commend him and the others there who have helped preserve the county's AAA bond rating. We'll want to keep that going strong. The county library system's healthy. We want to keep that going robust and strong. But I would disagree with Mayor Caroon on a few issues and would like to push some conservative values forward.
Do you have any concerns that the people of your city, West Valley, feel as though you're, you know, kind of leaving them in the middle of your very first term, only 2 years into the job?
Well, if I am successful, by January 2013, it would have been 3 years as mayor, 4 years on the city council, 4 years as business development manager, and 15 years as a city volunteer. My roots are deep in West Valley. My kids are the sixth generation Winders to live on Winder Lane. So no one's going to question my loyalty and devotion to my hometown. In fact, quite the contrary, I'll be able to serve her better in a large way by being at the county level, just as Governor Norm Bangeter, a legislator from West Valley City, was able to keep an eye on his hometown when he was governor.
Listeners, join us on the air at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. You can also send us your tweets this morning directly to at KCPW. Mayor Winder, what does Mike Winder have to offer that other candidates don't, you think?
I think I bring a fresh perspective than those who are currently in the county. I bring some municipal experience as a mayor and having worked with other city leaders, and we need a more city-friendly county government. I bring a perspective of having a lean regional county government with more of the power down at the city level. And so it is a unique perspective that's unique to myself.
Mike, let's go into your track record as mayor of West Valley City, and feel free to go into, you know, detail over the past couple of years. What have you been able to accomplish in the past couple of years on the job?
I've been really proud of the team at West Valley, and I say team because all these things are a team effort, and the mayor is one part of the team. But we've had some enormous economic development success. The Valley Fair Mall is the second largest retail project in the state. We're turning that around. We've seen over 3,000 jobs created in West Valley in the last 3 years, either new businesses expanding or businesses coming into our city. I'm proud of that. Lake Park Corporate Center is now the largest business park in the state. I'm proud that crime's dropped for 4 straight years in West Valley, gang crime for 5 straight years. I'm proud of our English language initiative, where we're encouraging people to learn English as quickly as possible and trying to bring our community together to rally around a common tongue. I'm proud of what we've done with fairness and equality with our anti-discrimination ordinances. I'm proud of us being part of the Clean Air Challenge and other initiatives to, we passed a no idling encouraging ordinance that doesn't require but does encourage. And so we're doing some good things all the way around West Valley City, and I'm really proud of the good things going on there.
Let's talk more about the English Language Initiative. Tell us the specifics of that and what the goal was when you launched it.
Yeah, Councilmember Steve Buehler and I launched that in January 2010. And we found that we're an increasingly diverse community. West Valley City is the most ethnically diverse city in the state, 45% ethnic minorities. Mm-hmm. 31% of families speak a language other than English at home. And we found as we've talked to our bosses, the residents, they're not racist. They don't care what color of skin you have. They don't care where you were born or your grandpa was born. They do care that you can communicate, that you can understand city ordinances, that you can speak English and talk to your neighbors, that you can help your kids with their homework and talk to their teacher at parent-teacher conference. And we realized that English is the language that binds us. It's the official language of the state of Utah. So we launched this initiative. We launched a website, englishwvc.org, that lists all of the free or low-cost English classes around the valley. Mm-hmm. We have a recognition program at City Council twice a year where so far we've recognized over 120 people who have completed English classes, and we continue to encourage people to learn English, and it's seen a great success, but we certainly have a long ways to go.
And so do you find that people are taking advantage of those classes? Has it been successful in getting them to show up?
They are. We've talked to people at Granite Peaks and others that do this, and they have said they've seen an increased enrollment. It's amazing when people know that the local government is applauding them and encouraging them and even rewarding them with a certificate. Simple as that is, they are rewarded for doing the right thing by learning English.
Let's talk about specifically economic development in West Valley City. What projects have been, you know, announced in West Valley in the past 2 years?
You know, we've seen, as I mentioned, with the Valley Fair Mall redevelopment, we've seen traffic jump there 40% over the last couple of years. The new Larry H. Miller Megaplex, including an IMAX screen, is currently under construction. You can see that construction from I-215. The Olive Garden there that just came into West Valley a couple of years back has been the number one Olive Garden in North America for 2 straight years. The Ross there is now the number one Ross in the state of Utah. The Wingers, the number one Wingers in the Wingers chain. So that whole mall area is hopping. With the light rail line coming in, we've really looked at the light rail stops as a string of pearls. How can we leverage transit for some positive transit-oriented development? Mm-hmm. And the crown jewel of that is Fairborn Station, which we announced, a $500 million city center project at the end of the West Valley line, there by City Hall and west of the mall. As part of that, the private sector stepped forward with a 7-story Embassy Suites hotel that's currently under construction. It'll be the first 4-star hotel in our city. We're excited about that. And then to the west of that, you see the brand new Granger High School under construction. Mm-hmm. We sold Granite School District the Granger Park and are using that money to build a new park space as part of Fairborn Station. But that's enabled them to build a brand new Granger High School currently under construction that'll be the largest and newest high school in the state when it's done. So we really have a West Valley Renaissance going on in the central core of our city, especially when you look at the mall area, you look at the Fairborn Station, and you look at Granger High. Of course, further west, we have a lot going on, 5600 West. Target will open up this summer. Further west, by the USON Amphitheater, Hexcel Corporation does a lot in aerospace, attracting high-paying engineering jobs as we continue to partner with them as a city.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson, talking now with West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder. Join us on the line at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255 with your questions and comments. Send your comments to us on Twitter as well, at KCPW. And, Mike, I was talking with another candidate for county mayor, Mark Crockett, a couple weeks ago, asking him what distinguished him from the other candidates in the race. He made an interesting comment, and he said he could never see government in any form subsidizing a project like a hotel. That was something he was opposed to. So clarify that for us. Is this, Embassy Suites, is it going to be taxpayer subsidized? And if so, does that not cause some concern?
The Embassy Suites will not be taxpayer subsidized, and there's not a penny of taxpayer dollars that will ultimately be used to build that. What is happening with the Embassy Suites is our redevelopment agency has sold them the property, and because of the tight credit market right now, lent them the money to build that. But all the monthly payments coming in from Embassy Suites covers that debt, and then some for administrative costs, and we have 2 years in escrow. So is it a risk? Sure, but it's a slight risk, and it's riskier to do nothing. I'm a Republican, not an anarchist. I believe that government does have a role to play, albeit a limited role, in helping encourage economic development and great placemaking and making a better future for our community.
Let's talk about crime. You talked about crime going down in the past couple of years in West Valley City. What would you attribute that to exactly?
You know, we have a terrific police department led by Chief Buzz Nelson. They're doing a phenomenal job. We have nationally recognized neighborhood groups. Our Night Out Against Crime each year wins awards. We have great neighbors looking out for each other. We've had a graffiti officer full-time the last 2 years reducing graffiti in our city, and those little things help. Our code enforcement officers are aggressive, and kind of like Mayor Giuliani's broken window theory in New York, if you take care of those little things, then larger things are taken care of. So we have a ways to go, but boy, we're doing a great job there, and we need to continue to do a great job.
Would you have any ideas to implement as county mayor when it comes to reducing crime in the valley or gang activity or coordination perhaps among the police agencies?
You know, the more coordination you have between agencies, the better. And I've been really proud of Chief Nelson, our city, for launching the Valley Police Alliance, where we have more communication with neighboring agencies than ever before. I would encourage the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Department, the Unified Police Department, to become part of that Valley Police Alliance. Most of the cities in the Valley have their 911 calls through VEC, the Valley Emergency Communication Center. Mm-hmm. And it would be great to see the county more involved with VEC as well.
We're speaking with West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder here on Politics Up Close. We're going to take a short break. Still feel free to join us on the phone, 801-355-TALK this morning, 801-355-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson, speaking this hour with West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder. You can join us at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Mike, in addition to, talking about crime and reducing actual crime, what is your role when it comes to reducing the perception about crime in West Valley City, not just to, reduce the crime itself, but to actually get other people to notice it as well?
You know, when I talk to a lot of our residents, they say, we're really the best-kept secret out here. We have great neighborhoods in West Valley, 10 minutes from the airport, 15 minutes from downtown. And with all the great things going on the retail side and event side, from Health Center Theater to the USANA Amphitheater, it's a great place to live. The problem is there are negative stereotypes out there. There are people who think, if you're from West Valley, boy, you better bring your Uzi, to protect yourself. And it's just ridiculous. But as you get people that come out to West Valley and they come to a play at Health Theater, or they go to a concert at USANA, or they visit a friend or a family member that lives in West Valley, they realize this is a great place. So a lot of it is just slogging it out person by person, changing perceptions. We try to do our best with the media as well, and it's great to be on shows like this to talk about my wonderful hometown. But it's a challenge, but it's one we continue to fight.
One thing you notice when you go out to West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder, Mayor Winder, and I've been to West Valley City myself, performed in some shows at Hill Center Theater, gotten an opportunity to see the community there, is, it's a city that you have to take your car around. You have tracks now, but, at the same time, it doesn't have the same feeling of simply being able to walk to most places where you need to go. How is that changing?
It's a good point. We kind of grew up as a farming community and then suburbs, and so we haven't had the historic Main Street or walkable city center like even Provo or Ogden or Salt Lake, of course, other old pioneer cities. And so part of this Fairborn Station initiative there, by our light rail stations to develop a more transit-oriented development, to develop a situation where people can come in on tracks, where they can live there. We have some great housing projects going on. Ivory will break ground this summer for the first Class A apartment tower in West Valley City as part of Fairborn Station, where they can work there. We have a number of great businesses along the light rail line and more coming in. You can entertain there. You mentioned the Health Center Theater, the Maverick Center, the new movie theater is coming in. So a lot of great things to make it more walkable. And that's part of the goal with this Fairborn Station development, is to have a city center worthy of Utah's second largest city and the premier transit-oriented development in the West.
Interesting issue specifically about the Hale Theater is that they are looking to expand their operations significantly, was looking for sort of support from the state legislature earlier this year. But if it comes down to seeking taxpayer support from West Valley City, what are your thoughts on that particular issue?
You know, West Valley City years ago built the Hale Center Theater, and we own that building. But all the payments on the bond have been covered by the monthly rent from the performing group from Hale Center Theater. And so that's been a good arrangement. In fact, Grandpa Ned Winder was the chair of the finance committee to help rally up the money and raise a lot of money from the private sector to help get that theater going. And so going forward, if there is a similar arrangement where we really weren't using taxpayer dollars, but we're more kind of the credit and good faith of the city, I'm okay with that. If it's just a subsidy from the general fund, hey, we're in tight times. We can't do that. I support the arts. I love the arts. I love Hale Center Theater. We'll help them as much as we can, but there are limits to what we can do.
Let's get into your platform for county mayor in a little more detail. During your announcement, you talked about what you refer to as breaking up the empire. What do you mean by that?
You know, for a number of decades, Salt Lake County government has often tried to be both a county government and a municipal government. And slowly, you've seen different pieces incorporate. In fact, I helped lead the Taylorsville incorporation effort back in 94. And you have seen Holiday, Cottonwood Heights, other cities become independent. And so all of a sudden you look at what's left of the unincorporated areas, and it's certainly not what it used to be. You have Mill Creek that's looking to incorporate. You have Magna, Kearns, Copperton, Immigration Canyon, White City, other pockets. And the whole model of the county being both a municipal government and a regional government just doesn't make sense anymore, if it ever did. And so I would look to how can we break up the empire, to use that phrase. How can we help each of those areas become part of a neighboring city or become a city themselves and get on their own feet? It seems like the county for years has fought that and resisted that. They have paid lobbyists up at the Hill to try to make it harder to incorporate or annex. I would be the opposite. I would say, how can we encourage more of that? I want a smaller county government. I want a leaner, more responsible, efficient regional county government. And I want those municipal decisions made on the local level. Now, that doesn't mean, Jeff, that we can't have cities partnering with each other or looking for other ways to create economies of scale. If Mill Creek were to incorporate next year, they have choices that West Valley didn't when we incorporated in 1980. They could partner, let's take police services. They could have their own Mill Creek Police Department, or they could partner with a neighboring city, Salt Lake or Cottonwood Heights, and contract for police service, or they could remain part of the Unified Police District, the UPD. And when you shop around like that and you have some choices, that leads to efficiencies, and that means the taxpayers win. And so there's some options that cities have as they become cities to do it efficiently that weren't there a couple of years ago.
Listeners, join us on the air at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Where do you think you would find savings, Mayor Winder, in the county budget that perhaps have not already been realized? I know Mayor Caroon, during the height of the recession, I think one year alone, there was more than $100 million cut from the budget. Where could you do better, perhaps?
You know, just by having a fresh perspective, having someone who hasn't been at the county, things are going to jump out to me that those who have been there and have gotten used to things maybe have blinders to. And so we'll look at things, whether it's they may be bigger things like the $600,000 a year the county loses each year with the equestrian park in South Jordan. And yet the records show only 54 people used the track out there last year. Pretty expensive subsidy, if you ask me. Might be small things, the $10,000 at the jail that we use to buy DVDs for the inmates each year. So that's one way. Another way is, as I mentioned, as we get out of the municipal service side of things, that's going to create enormous savings on the county side. I realize some of that's like squeezing the air in the balloon and we'll shift to the municipal side. But I believe on the municipal side, they can be more efficient because it's closer to the taxpayers' dollars, and they have to be more careful with it there. A third way is you look at Salt Lake County, and there is 18 elected officials. You have your 9-member county council, mm-hmm. and then 8 others, the county mayor, auditor, surveyor, treasurer, all those. Some of those positions, and this would require legislative change, I know, but maybe we can consolidate some of those offices. Maybe some of those offices should be part of the mayor's cabinet, where the mayor appoints them and then the council ratifies them. Think what a mess Washington, D.C. would be, or a bigger mess, if we elected independently the Attorney General and the Secretary of State and Secretary of Education. Well, that's Salt Lake County. It's a 9-headed beast there with 9 different executives right now. So that may be a way to look. There's also savings with privatization. One of the great things we've done in West Valley City is when we were faced with a garbage hike last year, mm-hmm. we bid it out the private sector. And we had 5 different private sector companies bidding on picking up our garbage. And the winning bid, we not only came in low enough that we did not have to raise rates like we feared, but they brought with them as part of the negotiations 100% CNG, compressed natural gas fleet. So the garbage trucks rumbling through West Valley City are 85% less carbon emissions than the old ones and a lot quieter as well. So when there's competition in place, the private sector, with the private sector involved, taxpayers win. So we need to look at that, whether it's with the golf courses or sanitation or other areas. Sometimes the private sector can do it better, sometimes they can't, but let's look at that.
Mayor, as our listeners have heard, a few months ago you recently admitted to writing a handful of freelance newspaper articles published primarily in the Deseret News under the name of Richard Burwash. You have since apologized for this action and voted in favor of a resolution in the city council to reprimand yourself. Your motivation for writing these kind of goes back to our point about improving perceptions of the city. Why did you decide to do it?
You know, I was frustrated. We have one of the town's 2 dailies, Deseret News, that had 9 community reporters, and with their massive layoffs in the summer of 2010, reduced that to 1. So we used to have a Deseret News reporter at every city council meeting, and then we didn't because the one reporter left has spread so thin around the valley. And when I asked Clark Gilbert, what should we do? He said, find someone in your community who likes to write, who attends everything, and can send us stories for free. Well, that's a tall bill to fill until I realized, hey, I like to write. I go to everything, and I'm happy to send in stories because I thought of, the crime desk they kept because it's easy to listen to the police scanners and follow up on those.
Right.
But the community's desk was decimated. And so any of the Deseret News subscribers were only getting the crime stories. So, yeah, so I made up a pen name. I had an ancestor, Richard Winder, in Burwash, England, in the 1500s. So I made up the name Richard Burwash, started writing stories. All the stories were true. They were about pretty innocuous things for the most part, you know, tracks on schedule in West Valley or a new Buddhist temple coming. They weren't even about City Hall things. They were more community things. And when I found out after sending him 4 of those that the Deseret News did not want pen names used, I stopped. And I was never caught for it, but one of the hardest things I did in my life was I marched into the office of the chairman, Mark Willis, and confessed to what I'd done. And said, Mark, boy, I'm taught that if you break someone's window, you tell them that you broke it. And he said, you realize we'll have to make this public? And I said, I understand, and public repentance is tough. But I had the integrity to confess to what I'd done, and apologize. When the council wanted to pass a resolution saying, hey, we want to be forthright and upfront, I said, absolutely, we should be. And I supported that. So we're moving forward, and boy, I learned a lot. I wouldn't do it again. But it is frustrating when you are fighting hard for your city to see coverage that's not telling the whole story.
It was about more than a pen name, though, wasn't it? I mean, according to accounts, you answered the phone as Richard Burwash. You said that, you know, Richard Burwash later had moved to England. I mean, wasn't there a deception involved here?
On the phone calls, there was one time where they were asked me to call to clarify a story. So, yeah, there was one call, and I regret that. At the end, when I realized they didn't want a pen name used, I didn't want to just terminate the account or kill the guy off. So I said, hey, I'm heading overseas, and left that as the final missive to him, and thinking, well, Richard's back to England where I pulled him from, and we're not going to worry about it anymore.
What do you say to voters or delegates who you know, take this incident and it makes them question your judgment?
Well, if you're looking for someone perfect to vote for, you missed your chance 2,000 years ago. But if you're looking for someone who's going to try really hard and to fight for their community, whether it's West Valley or Salt Lake County, and who's going to err on the side of action and progress, I'm your guy. Some days I'll step in it, and when that happens, I'll confess to it and come up front. Not a lot of politicians these days, when they make mistakes, will publicly come forward and say, this is what I did. Most wait till they're caught. You don't get that with me. I am what I am, and what you see is what you get, and I am forthright and transparent. And when a mistake's made, I'm going to confess to it. I'd like to say I'll never make a mistake again, but I think that'd be a falsehood for any of us to say.
What's your response to the chair of the Salt Lake County Republican Party, Julie Dole, actually writing you a letter telling you that she didn't want you to run? You know, normally the party chair stays neutral, so this is almost an unprecedented move here. How did you respond to that?
You know, Julie Dole is a great woman with a lot of great organizational talents. One blind spot, perhaps, is she's gotten a little overzealous for her favored candidates in the race for county mayor. And if you look at her Twitter and her Facebook and social media, she's been very vocal in support of some candidates versus others. And so I wasn't surprised when I got her letter trying to keep me out of the race. But the beauty of it is party bosses don't decide who the nominees are in Utah. The delegates decide. And last night, the delegates were elected all around the valley, about 1,600 of them are county delegates. And they'll decide the convention April 14th. And so for the next few weeks, I'll be reaching out to those delegates and pleading my case and talking about the future of Salt Lake County. And they'll decide, not Julie Dole, who the next county mayor nominee for the Republican Party will be.
How do you think you did in those caucuses last night?
You know, we're getting great reports from all around the valley. But there's also a lot of great people who are elected delegate who are going to listen to each of the candidates and make decisions on their own for who they should support. And I look forward to that conversation. I think we have a great story to tell about the future direction of Salt Lake County.
So there are now six Republican candidates in this race, and that's, you know, not including the two on the Democratic side. How difficult is it going to be to stand out amongst such a, you know, crazy large field?
Well, the good news is we've been at this for a number of months. We've been reaching out to delegates and would-be delegates. We've been building volunteers all around the valley who are talking to their neighbors and advocating for my candidacy. And so we'll continue that. And I think those who jumped in the race this week are playing a little bit of a catch-up game on that. And those of us who have been at it for a while maybe have a little advantage in organization.
What's your fundraising going to be like for this race? How much do you have to raise to be able to win a countywide seat, the largest county in the state, about 1 million people?
You know, Peter Kroon used $600,000 4 years ago in his race. And this year, with all the competition, it could be a $1 million race. Mm-hmm. But we've had some great success. I've had some successful mayor's galas in years past where I've been able to prove that I've been able to fundraise. We've been going back to a lot of those and raising money already this year. We had a great fundraiser last week that former Governor Norm Bangeter, former Senator Jake Garn, and former Congressman Jim Hansen threw for me. So we're getting some great support with volunteers, getting some great support with elected official endorsements from all around the valley, local and state. We're getting some great fundraising coming in, and we're feeling the momentum. Salt Lake County needs a change. They want limited government. They want someone who favors local control, economic growth, and someone who is authentic and genuine. And I feel that's who I am.
And finally, what about the general election? Do you think you can convince Republicans you'd be able to win it with Ben McAdams and Ross Romero from the state Senate on the other side? You know, Salt Lake County, it tends to flip back and forth, as we've seen in recent years. So how would you be victorious there?
You know, they do. Ben and Ross are good men and friends of mine. And I look forward to a vigorous general election if that's how it shapes up with one of them. And I think it's going to be a good Republican year in Utah. And I think a good, common-sense, pragmatic Republican like myself could do well countywide. I also think when I look at the West Valley, Taylorsville, Kearns, Magna area, where I've spent a lot of my time, that area sometimes votes Republican, sometimes votes Democrat. And I think if I'm the county mayor nominee, hopefully a lot of my friends and neighbors in that area come out to support me as well, which would help.
Do you define yourself strictly as a conservative? You know, you've supported the non-discrimination ordinance there in West Valley, and that's primarily an issue that's been, you know, largely Democratic here in the state of Utah. How do you appeal to the GOP base while at the same time make it clear that you will support things that Democrats support in principle sometimes?
Well, I am right of center. I am a conservative, and there are going to be times where I look at an issue and say, you know what, left, right aside, this is the right thing to do. And that's how I felt on that specific case. And I'm going to be very upfront with what I stand for. I am in my literature. I am on my website, mikewinder.com. I'm not going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. There's going to be people who will disagree with me, whether it's on the anti-discrimination ordinance or whether it's on should we go to a wall-to-wall city scenario. That's okay. I'm going to put my record out there and put what I stand for out there and let the voters decide.
We've been speaking with Mike Winder, mayor of West Valley City, since being elected in 2009, now a candidate for Salt Lake County mayor in a field of six GOP candidates. Mayor Winder, thank you for joining us on Politics Up Close. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Jeff Robinson. We'll be right back. This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. When you think of the word lobbyist, it might conjure up images of backroom deals and people like Jack Abramoff, who appeared on this program a few weeks ago. But a veteran lobbyist in Washington is hoping to change that and has been trying to get the Obama administration to stop making lobbyist a dirty word. Howard Marlowe is president of the American League of Lobbyists and Marlowe & Company, a government consulting firm founded in 1984. He joins me now on the phone to discuss what lobbyists do and what they have to offer people who want to influence their elected officials. Howard, thanks for joining us on the show.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
And to offer the Utah perspective, we're also glad to have Frank Pignanelli, partner at Foxley & Pignanelli in Salt Lake City, columnist for the Deseret News, and former House Minority Leader in the Utah Legislature. Frank, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Well, Howard, let's start off with the general question here. How do you define the term lobbyist?
Lobbyists are defined both in law and in practice as people who advocate on behalf of either their employer or their client on issues that are public policy issues, and who contact elected officials or senior members of the executive branch here in Washington and plead their case. In essence, what they're doing is helping the folks that they represent get their points across to those people and to exercise in an effective manner their First Amendment rights.
And Howard, what is your what are your thoughts on the general perception of lobbyists in today's world right now? Do you think that most people think of lobbyists as folks like Jack Abramoff, who was on the show a couple weeks ago?
I think that obviously we're getting a lot of bad publicity, both from Abramoff and from, quite frankly, the president, who's bashed lobbyists since the time he was running for president. And just for the record, this is not a political statement, just a statement of fact. But Abramoff was never a lobbyist. When he was on your program, he said he couldn't remember whether he was a registered lobbyist. There are tens of thousands of lobbyists here in Washington and in Utah and all other states that lobby on both legal and ethical manner. And Abramoff did none of that.
And Frank Pignanelli, what are your thoughts on the perception of lobbyists here in Utah? Is it pretty negative as well?
Well, it does get a bad rap on a couple of things. First of all, the national attacks, whether from President Obama or even from Republicans, doesn't help. Secondly, the media loves to make fun of lobbyists. What's interesting, though, Doug and I, my partner Doug Foxy, we represent the media. We're actually lobbyists for the media because they have important issues before the state legislature and the governor's office and others. And what they asked us to do is that they, because Doug and I know the process, we know some of the players. More importantly, we can provide a strategy for them. That's the best thing a lobbyist do. It's the same thing that a lawyer provides or even a doctor provides to people, which is a strategy how to deal with your problems. And that's what we do, is we provide a strategy, and then they make the decisions whether to execute that strategy or not.
Yeah, and I agree very much with Frank. Our clients of my firm are cities and counties. In fact, at one time we represented South Salt Lake. And we sit down with them. We talk with them about what their needs are. We help them prioritize because sometimes they're looking for things in Washington that are just not realistic. And then we help them to formulate how to bring their case to their elected officials. We get them to come into Washington. We're facilitating in that sense. The kind of stuff that Abramoff is talking about is, he went to jail for it, and he belonged in it. And if it were going on in other places, other people would go to jail.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guests are Howard Marlowe. He is president of the American League of Lobbyists, and we're also glad to have Frank Pignanelli, partner at Foxley and Pignanelli here in Salt Lake City. Well, Howard, give me a sense then of exactly how you do your job as a lobbyist, what the day-to-day activities involve for both you and, your partners and the people who work for your firm.
Actually, incidentally, there may be an article coming out in a national magazine soon that had a reporter shadowing me. It was probably a first in Washington for lobbyists to let a reporter come along and see what I do. But and fortunately that day we had a client in town. But even for meetings that did not involve that client, I'm prepped. I got a fact sheet. I know what I want to bring to that. I know the people who I want to talk to, and if I'm talking directly to, usually talking with staff members, not always talking with members of Congress. They're busy folks. Staff members are the folks who keep track of the issues, and all I'm doing is up there and meeting with them or having our clients talk with them. We brief our clients before they go into a meeting so they know how to make their case effectively within a short period of time. And then we come out and we follow up and we stay in touch. We're people who try to help our clients resolve problems as well as meet their needs. There are a bunch of problems that you can have with the federal government trying to weave your way through their system.
And Howard, is it only meetings though? Are there meals, that sort of thing? Buying meals or gifts for lawmakers?
No, they're totally prohibited at the federal level. I can't buy a bottle of water. I can't even give somebody a Marlowe & Company pen on the Hill. Totally prohibited.
Frank Pignanelli, talk about some of the lobbyist changes that were implemented here in Utah back a couple of years ago. I believe you were perhaps involved in formulating those in some way.
Yes, because Doug and I have remained committed. We're very proud to be lobbyists. We believe that we know it to be a great profession. We do wonderful things for not just business clients, but a lot of nonprofits. Some of the changes, were more quarterly reporting on dinners and lunches, anything over $10 is reportable unless you invite the whole legislature or a whole committee. So they've ramped up that reporting, which is fine. Right? I think that's great. Let it out there. The only thing that's a little frustrating is that it's hard to find a breakfast or lunch or dinner for $10, and you can buy some and still that. This has to be reported. So what happens a lot is that you'll find the cheapest meals, and that's not always the best meals. But at the same time, I believe in transparency and accountability, and that's great. People ought to know where their legislators are going to dinner, things like that, if it's a more expensive dinner. There's a sensitivity by lawmakers. They don't want to be reported, but yet no one's ever lost an election because they went to dinner with a lobbyist. I think that the sensitivity is heightened by the media. One thing I want to point out, I give a lot of lectures to different trade groups, to nonprofits. When I go up the Capitol, yes, I represent some corporate and business interests, but I will always lose to a well-organized citizen group that's opposed to me. And that's the way it should be. Citizens are activated and engaged, either through a lobbyist or whatever, but if they're up there talking to the representatives, I'll always lose. Let me tell you who the best lobbyist is. The best lobbyist is Gail Ruzicka. Now, I disagree with Gail Ruzicka on almost everything, but look what she's done. She is completely, every year she changes the debate up there.
Right.
And she does not give out campaign contributions. She has a small group of people, but they show up. She is an indication that the system works. Yes, you can have businesses and associations and nonprofits hire lobbyists, but more importantly, citizens who engage can transform the system. And so anyone who says the system's broken or it's corrupt or whatever, well, they're dead wrong. All they have to look to is open their papers, and they can see a citizens group, pro and con this issue, are making a difference. All we do is we're making it easier for people who maybe can't get up to Capitol Hill. But at the end of the day, the people that run the show in state government and sometimes in federal government are those people who show up. So it's just lazy to say the system's broken.
Well, Frank, let me ask you. There was an interesting article in the Tribune this year by Lee Davidson about these sponsored lunches that lawmakers have. It seems that every day during the session they have some kind of lunch sponsored by a various group. Does that not give you cause for concern, at least about the perception of what you do up there on Capitol Hill, that people think that you're giving lawmakers free lunch every day?
Well, different trade associations, groups, and organizations will sponsor lunch, and I had some clients that sponsor lunch. I've never once had a lawmaker say they're going to vote for or against something because of the lunch I bought. It's just not the case. What it is, it provides an opportunity. These guys, these men and women are very busy, and what these lunches do, they're there all at once. You have their attention for 10 minutes, and you can make the presentation. Now, you don't have to have bought them a lunch. in order to make the presentation. You can get on the calendar. A lot of nonprofit organizations do that. We just believe that for some of the trade associations, other organizations that we represent, that if we're going to have 10 minutes of these lawmakers' time, we're happy to spend the $10 or so that it costs, maybe less than that, to help offset the cost of that lunch. Because that's money that the legislators don't have to take out of the personal funds. It's money that the taxpayers don't have to pay for. I'm sorry, but the media, who I represent, make a much bigger deal about this because competing interests will buy a small lunch or breakfast for the lawmakers. So it's not like they're gaining any influence over that. They're just trying to be helpful to the process.
Well, Frank, give us a sense of the types of organizations that and companies that you represent.
I represent Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Utah, a local health insurance company. I represent the Trade Association for the Industrial Banks, which are a very key component of Utah's economy. I represent technology companies, ranging all the way from Utah Interactive, which does the e-government website, a very good, one of the best websites in the country. We do work for some work for IBM. We do some work for Google here in Utah. We also do some work for a number of, like, for example, a great company, local company, Woodbury Corporation. We do work for them. We do work, almost a pro bono basis in many ways for the Shakespeare Theater, for the Utah Media Coalition, the Utah Press Association, some of the Medco. We do some work, too. So it's a wide variety of businesses that and corporations and trade associations we do work for. We also do some nonprofit stuff, whether for the Utah Symphony, Coalition for the Blind, things of that nature.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with Frank Pignanelli with Foxley and Pignanelli and also Howard Marlowe with the American League of Lobbyists as well. And Howard, I want to come back to you and ask you specifically about, this letter you wrote to President Obama recently regarding your trade. What did you have to say in that letter?
What we did was to point out that the bashing that the president's done of lobbyists, the fact that he will not allow lobbyists, registered lobbyists, to come into the White House to have meetings. He will not allow registered lobbyists to be on federal advisory committees, which are committees to provide expert advice to various federal agencies. All of the things and more that he's done have discouraged people from registering. In fact, we've lost, I have estimated, about 3,000 registered lobbyists to being unregistered lobbyists. So now the key words that Frank used before were transparency and accountability. If I am a registered lobbyist, you can look on the website of the United States Senate, the United States House, or two private organizations. Mm-hmm. You can find out who I am paid by, how much I'm paid, and what I'm paid to do. If I'm not registered, then I can't be found, period. And so that's bad for public policy.
Howard, I want to ask you about something Jack Abramoff proposed when I interviewed him a few weeks ago in talking about, cleaning up the system. He said that he thinks that anyone who lobbies the federal government, whether you're an actual lobbyist or somebody employing a lobbyist, should be banned from contributing to those elected officials at all. What's your response to that?
Two things. I would be delighted if members of Congress could not ask me for political contributions. It would be
your point,
fantastic. Second of all, it's a problem with the Constitution. The Supreme Court is not going to allow that to happen. So it's a great idea that is not going to have any execution. With Abramoff, it's like asking Osama bin Laden to come in and give us a lecture on how to prevent terrorism. It's somebody who has scammed the system, who then got convicted. So did the members of Congress who took money from him and other gifts. And then he spent time in jail. Now he's out of jail. He's scamming the system so he can raise the money to pay off his debts. He built Indian tribes out of $40 million, all of those things. There's no way that man should be given credence when we have lobbyists in Utah and in Washington and everywhere else who have been, going on for years. I could not be in business here for 28 years. I could not be without having credibility and a good reputation, and that's the way other folks are in the lobbying profession.
Well, Frank, let me ask you, because Utah's a, you know, contribution system, there are less rules than the federal government. Corporations can donate directly to candidates for political office in this state. Does that give you cause for concern?
It doesn't for me, because first of all, it's all transparent. Not only does the Canada have to disclose, but any corporation or PAC that donates more than $750 per year has to disclose. So it's all transparent. And you know, we're a smaller state, so the pool of individuals to go for, if we were to prohibit corporate contributions, would be limited. I don't understand what the problem is with that. If a business wants to contribute to a candidate, they should be able to do so. I've yet to see any problems other than hypothetical problems that are out there. So I just don't see any issues at all with that. One of the things I just wanted, and Harold's much more of a gentleman than I am. Look, I voted for Obama. But whether it's President Obama or it's a member of Congress, and Republicans do this too, any politician, local or national, that says the problem with government's the lobbyists, or lobbyists have done this, they are at the best duplicitous, but they're being hypocritical. Harold and I don't have a vote. Harold and I cannot push a button and vote. So if an elected official is upset at the result of something, it's the people who vote who make the difference. They can
Amen.
Say no. They can say yes. It's up to them. So to blame a lobbyist is like blaming the waiter because you ordered an extra dessert. All we do is provide information. And this bashing a lobbyist, saying we're to blame, is really hypocritical, because if they want to change the system, they can do it. They all have to do is say no or yes to us.
And, Frank, let me ask you, you know, if I am somebody who's interested in employing a lobbyist here in Utah, how much more effective will that make my voice versus, perhaps going to my lawmaker directly? And how costly is it to employ a lobbyist here in Utah?
It all depends. Obviously, if it's a large technical business matter, it's going to cost more because you have to wade in and get the details. I always encourage people, if it's a neighborhood issue or whatever, get together your neighbors, go talk with your lawmaker, because it's, you know, still a small state, you can accomplish it. If you do want to, and oftentimes I provide free advice to citizens groups, whatever, how to get a bill passed. But if they really want to, it's much like hiring a lawyer. If you have a small claims court matter, there's no details, go represent yourself. But if you have a lot at stake, or your industry has a lot at stake, or your community has a lot at stake, then just as you would in a lawsuit, you would hire a professional. And what lobbyists offer is the understanding of the process. They will know lawmakers, but they'll also know, say, look, if this lawmaker is going to hear this, or this is what's important to them. This is, you know, they're not necessarily going to schmooze them, but they're going to say, these are the issues important to this group of lawmakers or this committee. They'll help you with the committee presentation. They'll help you with the handouts and things of that nature. So they provide professional advice and guidance. And it all depends on the expertise. Businesses pay more, but also they demand more because they want year-round help and assistance. So it can range anywhere from several thousand dollars to much more than that, depending upon the nature of the issue and if it's going to be a year-round issue. And it's just like anything else, you pay for that assistance, especially if you're opposing a group organization that has lobbyists on the other side.
Gentlemen, we're out of time, but this has been a great conversation. You're listening to Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guests this segment have been Howard Marlowe. He's president of the American League of Lobbyists and Marlowe and Company. And Howard, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And we're also pleased to have been joined by Frank Pignanelli, partner at Foxley and Pignanelli here in Salt Lake City, former House Minority Leader in the Utah Legislature as well. Frank, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
You're listening to Politics Up Close here on NPR Utah, KCPW. Republicans wanting a voice in Utah's political process were given that chance last night as thousands of new delegates and precinct chairs were elected at GOP caucus meetings across the state. KCPW's Jessica Gale was at Hawthorne Elementary in Salt Lake City and reports on what people there had to say about the upcoming elections.
Who would nominate someone to be the chairman?
School was not in session Thursday evening, but Hawthorne Elementary was still full of Salt Lake City residents anxious to learn how to have more of a say in local politics.
Is there anyone who would like to be a state delegate?
Shauna Gee was elected by the people in her area to serve as a state delegate in Precinct 2, located in South Salt Lake. G Yee is no stranger to the position, having already served two terms. She says she has seen how much delegates can change the way things play out.
I mean, for example, Bennett, where we were really upset with him. I mean, you go there and the people who are really concerned research the different issues and visit the candidates, and you really have a voice.
One of Guy's responsibilities as a state delegate is to help decide on a candidate in the state's upcoming Senate race, led primarily by incumbent Orrin Hatch, former Utah Senator Dan Lilienquist, and State Representative Chris Harrod. Many of the residents in Precinct 2 came with their choice in mind, and most of them agree with Joy Cummings, who says don't mess with experience.
The government's working. He's to the point where he can make a difference now, whereas the new ones can't. So it makes a difference whether they've been in there a long time or not.
Josh Jacobson of Precinct 68 is a Dan Lilienquist supporter and showed up to his first caucus Thursday just to support him.
He stands for a smaller federal government and returning rights to the states. I appreciate that. He's a strong advocate for the Constitution and for limiting federal powers and enabling states, which is how our nation was founded, and I feel we need to return to that.
County delegates were also put in place to vote in the upcoming Salt Lake County mayor race. The Republican lineup includes West Valley Mayor Mike Winder, Salt Lake County Recorder Gary Ott, former County Councilman Mark Crockett, County Councilman Richard Snellgrove, and former Congressman Merrill Cook. The Republican State Convention will be held April 21st. I'm Jessica Gale, KCPW News.
And that does it for Politics Up Close. Listen to the show every Friday morning at 9 and Sunday morning at 6, and download podcasts of our interviews online at kcbw.org. Thanks to Jesse Ellis for his help with the program, and Jennifer Napier-Pierce. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.